Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof massaging leather-appointed seats are available features.
Well, CBS is shaking up its pro and college football broadcast teams, and that's the lead story on the newest edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. Hi, I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Let's just get right to it. CBS announcing today, we're taping Wednesday, that Gary Danielson is retiring from its college football coverage at the end of next season and will be replaced by Charles Davis, who has been the network's number two NFL broadcaster. And that was initially the story until Andrew Marchand reported a short time later that Davis will now be replaced this season by J.J. Watt. And so ultimately, this is really a J.J. Watt story about CBS now promoting this young analyst to its number two guy now behind Tony Romo. And that is the big story. For Charles Davis, he's getting the old Pam Oliver treatment, right? He's being promoted to a lesser position. And so he will be the lead analyst on CBS college football coverage, which will consist of, you know, maybe occasionally a pretty decent Big Ten game, maybe every now and again the Big Ten title game, but it's, you know, this is not the SEC on CBS here. This is not the biggest game from the biggest conference every week. So he's being, again, it's the Pam Oliver. He's getting a promotion to something that is a lesser position. Obviously, as far as Danielson goes, you know, someone who a lot of people like to criticize on social media, but he's been a huge part of, football by virtue of being on those SEC on CBS games for 20 years. So a lot to dig into here. And Armand, I will let you take it from here.
How about us getting this news just before we tape the podcast? That's pretty cool. Usually it happens after the fact for us and we're snapping our fingers in disappointment. There's so much going on here, John. First of all, I do want people to understand how significant this is just from Gary Danielson's standpoint. It's the end of an era. Vern is gone and Gary will be on his way out. I don't know if you remember, but I reached out to you some time ago. You had done something with CBS. And I asked you, I said, have they been discussing any plans to replace Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson? I think Nessler's 68. Danielson is 73. He'll be 74 right near the start of the season. And you said at the time that nothing had been discussed. Well, here we are with some huge news here. First of all, Gary Danielson for a stretch, maybe mid-90s to mid-2000s, he was probably the best analyst in college football, the best game analyst in college football, right up there with maybe Mike Gottfried, maybe Bob Greasy, Pat Hayden. But I do think Danielson was the brightest star of them all for a good stretch there, mid-90s to mid-2000s, was a great analyst. I do think he leaned a lot into the SEC stuff, and he drew the ire of a lot of folks, SEC fans and non-SEC fans. But for many years, he was a very good broadcaster, so much so that ABC gave him and Brent Musburger a wild card playoff game back in the early 2000s when the Jets shellacked Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts, I think in 2002. So much going on here. This era is over. No Vern, no Gary. You're right about the Charles Davis piece. This is an obvious demotion for him. This is not Auburn, Alabama every week. This is USC, Michigan one week, Iowa, Iowa State another week. So not quite the same gravitas as the Iron Bowl every year for Charles Davis. The J.J. Watt piece is obviously the most interesting piece here because it's not just that he's becoming the number two analyst. It's that he's becoming the number two analyst right away. So much intrigue here. when you also consider the fact that Charles Davis is not going to be with Ian Eagle this coming season, but he's not going to be with Nestler on the Big Ten games until next season. So what happens with Charles Davis for the 2025 season? Where will he be? Will he be in studio? Will he be on a lower NFL crew? Will he be doing college games until it's time for him to elevate to that spot? So many questions to answer. J.J. Watt is only 36 years old. J.J. did the Christmas Netflix game with Ian Eagle and Nate Burleson, the Kansas City-Pittsburgh game, and maybe that was enough to give CBS the confidence here. But I have a feeling, and this is just me reaching a little bit, but sort of putting two and two together, the fact that the press releases came back-to-back makes it seem like this has been in the works for some time. And so it seems like CBS has been sort of planning this a bit, and it doesn't seem like it's a coincidence that the Watt news comes right after the Danielson news. So this one seems to have been worked out behind the scenes for a while by CBS.
Well, I think it was kind of a graceful move, right? You know, this is overshadowing Danielson's retirement, right? You'll notice my article on SNW has a picture of Gary Danielson. If they had led with the J.J. Watt news, it'd have a picture of J.J. Watt, right? But because they put out the Danielson press release first, that was the story. Look, I think that's nice. I think that's a nice thing for them to do for someone who has been part of their network for 20 years. I will say, you know, as far as what will Charles Davis do next year, well, this would be the obviously smart move of having it be a three-man booth for a year so that J.J. Watt can get acclimated. Davis kind of blends in anyway. Like, he's not someone who dominates a call. So you can, you know, kind of groom Watt, who, he did the Christmas game, but that was also a three-man booth, as you said. You can groom Watt while having a role for Davis, who is, beyond anything else, a student of the game of broadcasting, right? I mean, he is someone who, you know, is out there seeking out advice from Bob Rathbun. And, you know, he's someone who has done NBA sideline reporting before. He's interested in broadcasting, right? So that might be a good person to have in a booth with Watt. But, you know, I mean, we're still doing this thing in the NFL, the Chasing Romo. Remember the movie Chasing Amy? I've never seen it, but I know the title. And all I can think is Chasing Romo or Chasing Tony, right? This whole business of trying to replicate something that was big in 2017. Well, you know, I shouldn't make this joke. We're all learning. We shouldn't run back things that happened in 2017. But, okay, look, the simple fact is that Romo was big at that time. And maybe we should be cognizant of the fact that it hasn't worked out necessarily as well as people would have thought back then. And I might say that Watt is somebody who is, I think they love the idea of a J.J. Watt in the analyst chair. But he's going to have to prove that he's as good as Charles Davis is right now, because I don't really know if we've seen any evidence of that yet.
When the Watt news broke, it took me back a little bit, because I would have thought CBS would have given the number two spot, frankly, to Matt Ryan. Number one, you get a quarterback. They love quarterbacks. All the networks do. Ryan had such a strong year in the studio on the NFL Today. And even when Matt Ryan did game analysis with Andrew Catalan and Tiki Barber, I thought he was also really strong, had a lot of potential. So I don't know if this is just CBS leaning more on Watt's star power, but I thought Matt Ryan would have been a more sensible choice. Not that J.J. Watt is not, but Matt Ryan has more experience as a game analyst. Is sharper there. But I guess the J.J. Watt, the star power and the name recognition is something that CBS just could not pass up. I also thought Jason McCourty possibly could have gotten a look at that number two spot. But once again, if this is already been in the works, which we have to put two and two together here and assume that it has been, then there was not going to be any other choice than J.J. Watt. But you make an interesting point, John, and Andrew Marchand pointed this out in his article in The Athletic. Romo is in year six coming up of that 10-year deal, and it's hard to imagine CBS wanting to give this man another $18 million or $20 or $25 million per year contract. Is J.J. Watt now a tool in the toolbox for CBS to say, just in case Tony Romo gets out of line, or just in case he starts reaching for too many stars, we have J.J. Watt here in our back pocket to say, well, Tony, we really loved you in 2017. We adored you in 2020 when everybody else was coming after you, mainly ESPN. But now we don't need you as much. We've got a J.J. Watt here in the bullpen. We've got a Matt Ryan in the bullpen. It seems to me that it's a real possibility, at least, that CBS could be looking at J.J. Watt as a potential successor to Tony Romo should they feel Romo is asking for too much money in that next contract.
Well, to be sure, you know, I mean, obviously there's a succession plan in place. Maybe it'll go better for CBS than it did for ESPN with the NBA when they had, oh, we'll put Jefferson and Reddick and 20 years down the line, they'll take over. Well, no, here we are. So, you know, succession plans don't always work out. My thought process as far as, the future goes for CBS, we don't even know if they're going to have the NFL. We don't even know if they're going to have a network. You know, there's a lot of weird, crazy stuff going on, and a lot of it pertains to CBS. We don't really know what the outcome of any of that's going to be. So you can't go too far down into the future here. I do think that, look, when all is said and done, eventually the networks are going to kind of come to the idea that you don't really need a superstar analyst for certainly the NFL. It's always good to have a great high-quality analyst who wins Emmys and all of that, but the amount of money that's been flying around has been ridiculous. I don't really think any of these folks bring the value. You know, you're worth what people will pay you, but none of these folks are bringing the value that you would expect for, you know, $20 million. I mean, now, look, Buck and Aikman might be the only ones where I would say they've earned the money in terms of the size of it, because ESPN was flailing. They could not figure out Monday Night Football. Buck and Aikman, okay, fine. That was worth the money. I guess Romo was, too. I mean, let's be real. Nance and Sims was kind of not going to work. If Romo hadn't come around, I can't imagine they'd still have Sims there now. So they needed to shake things up. But, you know, I mean, I guess what it comes down to is, do I think there's any analyst out there who's brought the kind of value to a network that the money requires outside of Buck and Aikman? I don't think so.
I agree with you on that. And at some point, this spending has got to slow down across the board. And maybe we're coming up on that point now, because Aikman has his money. I think he's now surpassed Romo as far as the highest paid game analyst by a little bit. So you have to think that at some point this thing slows down a bit. And maybe this is an opportunity to, quote unquote, reset the market, as they say, because it's hard to imagine. Of course, you got Amazon out there, so, and they've got endless amounts of money. And we know that Sean McVay is still someone the networks are salivating over. But it's hard to imagine with everything going on in television you just brought up, and you keep me honest on it, and I appreciate it. Just keep reminding the listeners of what's happening with Paramount and CBS and all the chaos that's happening there. But it's hard to imagine that these networks are going to keep cranking out $15, $20 million a year type contracts for broadcasters. You would think that would slow down a bit. And maybe this is the window of time in which we start to see that slow down.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the real test is going to be, what is J.J. Watt's contract going to look like the next time he resigns, right? Because that'll be a real test, because Watt is straight out of that central cast. I mean, remember, they were going to make Jay Cutler the number two analyst on Fox for no reason. He never gave them any. I mean, like, we still don't know if he was going to be any good. I strongly doubt he would have been. I mean, there's just, I mean, all the way through, you know, Witten on ESPN, over and over, they just go, oh, this guy just retired and people know his name. Let's give him $15 million. That's got to stop at some point. And look, maybe Watt will be a revelation, right? But, you know, to put a pin in this conversation here, ABC got John Madden and promptly lost the rights in 3 years, right? They got John Madden and then they were out of the NFL 3 years later. So to me, you know, I get the sense that we overstate the importance of these analysts a bit.
I agree. To wrap it up on Danielson, though, my favorite line from Gary is right after the kick six play, when he's breaking down the replay with all the Alabama guys on the field, he mentions that there are no athletes, and his classic line, they had all fat guys. So Gary Danielson, he deserves some props. It's been he's been a polarizing figure in college football for a while now, but there was a stretch there when he was one of the absolute best.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, hey, SEC on CBS is a tremendous era. It's in the rearview mirror now. Feels like just yesterday when ESPN got the rights and you said, well, we've got four more seasons. Well, not only have all four of those seasons passed, we're now one season into the new deals. And that is the way that time tends to play.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
All right, let's shift gears now to some of the other sports media topics. And of course, we're in the middle of, or actually the end of March, and March Madness is underway on the men's and women's side. Men's tournament is the most watched in 32 years. That's right, it's been 32 years since people have been watching March Madness the way that they are now. And of course, anyone who listens to this podcast knows that's complete BS. The reality of the matter is, because of out-of-home viewing, the numbers today look very good compared to the numbers in the past in a way that is misleading. I am going with the assumption that at best, this is the most watched tournament in 8 years, which is actually still really good. It's still really good to be the most watched tournament in 8 years, but it sure as heck is not the most watched tournament in 32. But of course, you know, Nielsen, blah, 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 blah. We all know the story with Nielsen, but it is still doing well. Can I tell you for sure that I believe that viewership is up even from last year? I don't really know. Because last year was 9 million. This year is 9.4 million. This is all through the second round. And the increase in out-of-home viewing that Nielsen put into place in February is significant enough that I think that all things being equal, I could see last year's average being 9.4 or 9.5 million if you had the same measurement than that you have now. So it might even be the case that viewership isn't even up. I think the important thing with numbers like these is to understand, okay, we don't really have any real way of measuring historical context because of the changes that Nielsen has been implementing. So we can just kind of look around and say, hey, 9.4 million viewers is pretty good in any context. Now, of course, it is also worth noting there is no other event in all of sports where you compare four concurrent games on four networks and you combine the number into one window. You don't do that for the women's tournament. No other sporting event is doing this. That's fair, though. I mean, I'm not a judge here, but I allow it because that's the way that it was in the CBS-only era. You had four games all at once and one window. So I get why they do it, but obviously on a game-by-game basis, you're talking like maybe $3 million, which is still really good. The numbers are good. I just get the sense there's a lot of maybe inflation happening.
And if you are, I know there's been a lot of talk and there's been some ridiculous conversations about the tournament being ruined and college basketball being ruined and no, there's no Cinderella. Oh, the sky is falling. It's a bunch of baloney. If you still got a Duke, you've still got Kentucky, you've got Michigan, you've got Auburn, still the number one overall seed, and Bruce Pearl, who is a character in and of himself. You've got Florida still in there. You've got Michigan State. You've got these recognizable teams, these recognizable brands that draw attention to your product. If you're CBS and WBD, you are pleased with that. To follow up on what you said, I have no idea what these ratings mean. I don't know how to put them in some proper context because, as you've noted, the game has changed so many times now with out-of-home viewing. I don't know. I do know that the networks are loving the fact that they've got all these big names still left. No, you don't have UConn. You don't have Rick Pitino. They were a story. St. John's extinguished by Arkansas, but you still got Arkansas in there. You've got John Calipari, a recognizable name. You've still got Kentucky. As a matter of fact, you've got a Kentucky-Tennessee matchup in the Sweet 16, which is pretty sweet, an SEC matchup there. And they've got so many teams left still in the tournament, so that could bode well for CBS and WBD even down the line. But yeah, I mean, the tournament at this point, it's sort of, is it fair to say, John, that the tournament is sort of bulletproof, so to speak? I mean, people are just going to watch it. It has that feel to it, that it's just going to get the numbers that it's going to get, even if there aren't these Zion Williamson type attractions in college basketball anymore.
The tournament is bulletproof in the first two rounds.
Okay.
You know, what I will say, one of the things that's always interesting to me is the lack of like any memory that anyone has. CBS is getting record numbers for the tournament like every year. Every single solitary year, there's at least one. We set a record. Most watched Thursday ever. Most watched Friday ever. You know, and look, this year with a record or with the highest since 93 through two rounds, that is the first time they've had that since 2017. But pretty much every year, first two rounds, you get that because you have four games on four networks at the same time or, you know, concurrently, whatever, that you're adding up together. Every team's around. At worst, you get a great upset. You know, at best, you get what you have this year, which I think is going to lead to a very significant rating story because the first two rounds are going to be the same every year. But the determination as to whether or not the tournament was successful in the ratings is always the Final Four and the Elite Eight and the Sweet 16. It's this week onward. You're going to get 9 million for the first two rounds, just whatever, just period. But what will determine whether or not the tournament did well in the ratings is the second week and obviously the Final Four, and they are set up quite well. They might be set up better this year than in any year that I can remember, and it's because there are no Cinderellas. Now, yes, Florida Gulf Coast was great. St. Peter's was great. But these teams, when the bubble pops, they get smoked, and those games don't do well, right? And the other thing, too, is you have, ultimately, teams that during the regular season wouldn't even get on ESPNU. And now you're showing them in prime time. So a lot of the times it's fun, but when you get to the end, you know, when you get to midnight, it's not really fun anymore. And I think a lot of people complain. This is like the Charles Barkley complaint about LeBron and Steph and the Lakers and Warriors. People want to see Duke. They want to see Kentucky. They want to see Michigan. They want to see, you know, I don't know, quite with Auburn and Alabama, it's still kind of odd that they're so good at basketball, but they want to see these teams, right? People want to see the big programs. And I'm sorry to say that people prefer Goliath to David, but they do, right? It's a wonderful fantasy we tell ourselves that we are all behind the underdog, but, you know, people want to see, you know, let me ask you this. After after Douglas beat Tyson, did Buster Douglas become a big star? I mean, no, Tyson was still the star because people want to see the star. People prefer the best player. They prefer the iconic teams, the ones that have won before. Yeah, it's wonderful to get Cinderella in there on paper. But if all you have is a team that everyone knows can't really win, and it's just a question of how long they can keep it going and whether they'll be able to lose with dignity as opposed to getting blown out, that's really not great to have toward the end. I think this final 16, you know, I don't really take the record for the first two rounds seriously. But this final 16, these could be some very strong numbers that aren't solely the result of out-of-home viewing coming up.
Yeah, and based on some of the storylines that exist, you could get some interest from that standpoint. BYU-Alabama could be the first team to 95, wins that one. Tom Izzo is still around, and everybody knows how Izzo and his Michigan State team seem to pop up in the tournament every year after maybe having somewhat of a sluggish regular season. You've got Caleb Love playing Duke again in the tournament. I'm a Tar Heel fan, so Caleb Love will always have a special place in my heart because of the shot in the 2022 Final Four, Coach K's final game. You've got I don't know how much the appeal exists with Auburn, but I do know that Bruce Pearl is somewhat of a character. Don't know how much interest there is in people seeing him either lose or win, but maybe some meat on the bone there. So there are enough good teams and compelling stories that we should have, I would think. We should have some pretty good ratings from here on out.
Let's shift gears to the women's side. And obviously, viewership's down for the women's tournament. Last year, they had Michael Jordan in it, basically. As far as drawing power, that's Caitlin Clark. And just like in the NBA, the 99 playoffs could not quite measure up to the 98. Although, frankly, they did pretty well until you got to the finals and it was New York, San Antonio. But this tournament so far, it's held up pretty well. I don't think the numbers are bad by any stretch. Second most watched tournament through two rounds since 2009. And out of home's a factor, but this is so much bigger than 2023 that I think it probably still would be the most watched since 2009, even without all of Nielsen's various changes. So I think it's doing well. The injury to Juju Watkins is unfortunate, obviously, but you still have UConn. And this is where the committee kind of got it right, because they guaranteed it'll be UConn or USC in the Final Four. Well, now you don't have Juju Watkins. I don't really know if you would want USC to get there. So at least you have UConn, right? Or a shocking upset by USC. I mean, one way or the other, because of the way they set it up, there's no real change to the Final Four as far as a TV appeal.
I'm just looking back at last year's numbers. 4.9 million for Iowa, West Virginia. Wow. 1.76 million for USC, Kansas last year. 2 million for LSU, Middle Tennessee last year. There's no way you would have expected the women's game to keep that up this season. I'm curious to see how things progress from a rating standpoint, as you mentioned, with the absence of Juju Watkins. South Carolina had a bit of a scare. We'll see how they do. They're a well-known brand, an established name. Don Staley is a legend at this point in college basketball. And as you mentioned, you still got UConn. I know as a fan, as just a fan of sports, seeing Juju go down like that really, really hurt. And you knew it was something pretty serious when she went down. It's kind of hard for me to say where ratings end up going forward for me, because, man, the game was on such a torrid pace last year. You had so much appeal with Caitlin Clark. Oh, gosh. And it's like the rising, how does it go? The rising tide lifts all the boats. That was truly the case last year. But I do think there's enough of a wave that's still going that there will be a great deal of intrigue and interest in the women's product for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, well, look, you could end up with, you know, South Carolina, UConn, South Carolina, LSU. Those are tremendous matchups, right? Maybe you get Haley Van Lith in there. North Carolina and Duke are weirdly low profile in the women's game. They're actually playing in the Sweet 16. I don't really think anyone even cares that they're playing. It's kind of odd how much that rivalry doesn't matter in the women's game, but you could get one of those two in there, right? I think if you end up with LSU South Carolina, UConn South Carolina, you'll be fine. You're not going to get 19 million viewers probably ever again, but you might get 10 or 11 million. I mean, I kind of doubt it. Probably more like 7-8 million. But I mean, that'll do quite well. The only question now is, you know, got to keep everyone healthy. You know, Juju Watkins tore her ACL. Paige Beckers tore her ACL, did she not? Right? I mean, this is a common injury for female athletes, at least according to Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal. And I think we all know female athletes, and certainly in basketball, have torn their ACL over the years. And so you got to keep everybody healthy, right? And as long as there's no more major injuries, I think you'll see some pretty strong numbers. And, you know, the certain types of people will say, oh, it's down 50, 60%. Eventually, we got to stop hearing what they have to say. It's still going to be a pretty amazing audience.
There will be momentum going forward. Let me ask you this, John, before we wrap this piece up. Has the women's game progressed to a point where it's established from a rating standpoint? With the numbers that we've seen of late, can we be sure that we're going to see similar numbers going forward, if you get what I'm asking you?
I think it's a very interesting question because we don't really know what the future holds. I believe that Nielsen's shift to the big data, so yet another Nielsen change, I think that's going to benefit certain properties. I don't know if women's basketball is one of them because it's older skewing. I don't know how much that has changed in the Caitlin Clark era. In fact, I kind of feel like Caitlin Clark maybe juiced the older audience more than the younger one. Because if you ever notice, you write about Caitlin Clark, the kind of the Facebook commenter demo, right? They eat that stuff up. They eat that stuff up. And that's not necessarily a great sign. You kind of want the TikTok demo to eat it up. You don't want the Facebook comment demo to eat it up. And I'm not trying to be ageist at all when I say that. It's realistic. So I think women's college basketball might not benefit from, and any of these older skewing sports might not benefit from this big data that Nielsen's putting in that obviously is focused primarily on streaming. So there's that. There's the simple reality that you're not guaranteed to just get generation after generation of huge stars. This is an incredible bounty of superstars that the women's game has had. This is an era of unbelievable names in women's basketball. Nobody can ever sustain that. What, do you think you're going to roll in, you just roll out of bed and get another Venus and Serena Williams in tennis, another Tiger in golf, you know, another LeBron James, another Steph Curry? It's luck, right, that occurs when you get players like that. And I think it's entirely possible that, you know, the well runs dry, right? Just like it did in the men's game, where between Zion and Cooper Flagg, there was kind of nobody. And beyond that, even Cooper Flagg doesn't have the juice ratings-wise that Zion did, certainly. So I don't know what the future holds, but I think it'll never go back to where it was. You're never going to see it go back to, whoa, wow, 4 million for the title game. That's great. That's done, right? The bar has been raised, and I don't see the viewership ever going back to where 4 million for the title game is good. But, you know, I also am not confident that they'll be able to keep this level of momentum going.
Who will be the next phenomenon, the next phenom? Who will be the next marvel? There's a difference between a great player and a marvel, a wonder. And Caitlin Clark definitely represented that during her time at Iowa. And college basketball is waiting on the next one in the men's and women's game.
Well, you know, the thing they've been talking about on the men's side, NIL creating these super teams and crowding out all the Cinderellas, well, that's been the status quo on the women's side. That's why the women's side has been so healthy, right? The odd thing about Caitlin, she went to Iowa. She didn't go to UConn. She didn't go to, you know, Baylor or any of the schools that were established. So it's interesting because obviously Iowa's a, you know, power four school. But he didn't go to any of the traditional powers. And you wonder if maybe that might have been part of the appeal. I mean, Iowa they weren't an underdog, but they were kind of new to this era of women's college basketball for certain, which might even have contributed to some of the frenzy surrounding her. All right, what we're going to do now is shift to Caitlin Clark briefly, because obviously she is in the WNBA now, and her Indiana Fever are playing nearly all of their games on a national platform next season, including two in prime time on CBS against Angel Reese and the Chicago Sky. Obviously, we've talked about how it's going to be impossible for women's college basketball to sustain the momentum just because you're not guaranteed to get these kinds of, you know, unicorn players all the time. But the great thing for the WNBA is Caitlin Clark, who is 23 years old, barring injury, barring anything weird, you got another 20 years of her potentially. And that, I mean, my goodness, that's the thing about the pros. You get those players for, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. This golden era of women's college basketball could be the thing that keeps the WNBA healthy through, you know, year 50 of its existence.
You know what this reminds me of a little bit, John? You mentioned Michael Jordan a while back. It got to a point where it was like, okay, NBC, you got Jordan. You know he's going to be there. This is what you do. This is how you make sure that fans have access. Once again, this is not just a great player. This is a sensation. This is a marvel. This is a wonder. And you want to put that in people's faces as much as possible. I know there are people who say, well, she shouldn't get all this attention. She shouldn't get all this shine. I'm sorry. You're wrong. You're just wrong. You don't put that kind of a talent, that kind of greatness, that kind of attention-grabbing sensation, you don't put it on the back burner. You raise that thing and you elevate it as much as you possibly can. And I give the WNBA credit for realizing that. And if people don't like it, oh well. We should also expect for Caitlin Clark to be improved as a player this year, getting acclimated to the professional game. So we could see a Caitlin Clark we haven't seen before, because she's still coming into her prime as a professional. And so kudos to the WNBA, kudos to CBS for making sure that the maximum number of eyeballs are on this talent, a talent we've not seen in many, many years. It's the right move.
And remember, Indiana added Dewanna Bonner, a bunch of veterans in the offseason. They look like they could make a legitimate finals run this year. Remember, WNBA expanded its finals from best of five to best of seven. First best of seven series in league history. And if you get a best of seven, Indiana against Vegas, Indiana against New York, I mean, even in the NFL season, that's going to be a big deal. This is the final year, by the way, of the current WNBA media rights deal. Next year, it'll be ESPN, yes, but you'll start getting finals on NBC, on Amazon. Remember, ESPN doesn't have the WNBA finals exclusively in its deal. So a lot of really interesting stuff. WNBA, I'm kind of high on for the next 15, 20 years. Women's college, it's asking a lot to keep that going with that level of momentum. All right, last week we had Bob Costas, and I think that was a tremendous episode, not to toot my own horn or Armand's, but I think it was a really great opportunity to have Bob Costas here. Gotten some great feedback on it as well. Before we go, why don't we talk a little bit about our Costas interview from last week? Bob was very kind to take an hour of his time to talk with us. It was a really great experience for both of us. And Armand, I know you had some thoughts about it.
Yeah, fascinating interview. Bob is still a remarkable communicator and a fabulous storyteller. He sort of slid it in there casually, but he mentioned the fact that the NBC piece, he and NBC, things seem to be turning in a positive direction as far as some either reunion or just the mending of fences. That was a big takeaway for me. The other piece that stood out to me is when Bob said that had things ended well at NBC, the TBS era might not have ever happened. And what struck me about it is here is a man who's done so much just excellent work, becoming really the paragon, a paragon of the industry, the example, the standard bearer, but has been looking for a smooth landing. In pursuit still, even after the NBC breakup happened more than 5 or 6 years ago now. He's still looking for that smooth landing. And it's just a reminder that even the best of us don't get the opportunity to decide how things end. And what Bob is looking for, at least from the conversation we had with him, Bob is looking for that nice send-off, that nice, clean ending. And it's fascinating to me that a man who is as celebrated and as revered in the industry as he is, he's still looking for that spot, that place to say, okay, I can get off the train now. And the fact that he hasn't quite gotten that yet and is still looking for it is just really, really fascinating to me.
Well, there's two ways to look at it. One way is you could say, well, you know, Bob isn't a shill. And if you're not a shill, things are going to be tough for you because people are going to make it tough for you. If you're going to speak out against the NFL, good luck, right? You know, Michelle Beadle said she didn't watch the NFL and they sent her to the shadow realm, right? I mean, no offense to, what is it called, Run It Back, but, you know, it sure as heck isn't ESPN. So, you know, that's one aspect of it. But in reality, fact is, there's plenty of shills who also go out badly. You know, everyone kind of goes out badly in this industry. You're either kind of driven out by social media critics because you're older and you can't see as well. You know, Bob, you know, Marv Albert had a good ending in terms of being able to go out on his own terms, but he was being, you know, ripped to shreds and ridiculed on social media all the time. Dick Stockton, again, ridiculed on social media all the time. How about in NASCAR, Mike Joy is always getting criticized. I mean, these are not necessarily the golden years for him in terms of his perception either, right? And this is just how it goes. If you're lucky enough to get to work deep into your 70s and late in life, or you can just get laid off. Susie Colbert is just gone, okay? And she didn't do anything wrong. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is. It's an industry that is short on what Keith Jackson got. Keith got that great send-off, and then he said, you know, I'm coming back anyway. And then he got another great send-off with that USC-Texas game. That's rare. And honestly, a lot of people just kind of get pushed out nowadays. And, you know, it's a very competitive industry. It's an arms race all the time. That's what we see with, J.J. Watt, to bring it full circle, right? And they might be getting ready to push Tony Romo out after he was the belle of the ball.
I wanted people to hear the interview, as much of it as they could, because I wanted people to understand that this is not just some old guy who told stories on TBS and bored people to tears with his baseball play-by-play who didn't yell enough. It was important for me for people just to understand why it was important for us to have Bob Costas on the podcast, to just have him talk about what happened at NBC, why it ended the way it ended. And I appreciate the fact even that Bob basically said, I take some ownership. I take some ownership for how things happened. We were both, he said, sort of being maybe passive aggressive, maybe sort of not handling things as well as we could have. I appreciated the fact that Bob has that sort of self-awareness. Man, maybe that happens after the fact, once you sort of go through the divorce and things happen the way they ended up happening back in 2018, 2019. But yeah, I mean, it's a case of no matter how great you were, eventually you get older, and very rarely do you get the perfect send-off. Very rarely do you get Jim Nantz at the tournament. Very rarely do you get Vern Lundquist at Augusta. Very rarely do you get Keith Jackson at the Rose Bowl. And Bob is still searching for that. But the reality is, John, as you said, this industry is cruel and unforgiving. And for every one Vern Lundquist, there are 5 or 10 Pat Summeralls and Bob Costases who just sort of burn out quietly, without a lot of the fanfare, without a lot of the pomp and circumstance. It's a harsh reality.
Yeah, remember, it's sports TV. There's nothing good about TV. We all owe at least a little bit of our careers to TV, but there's nothing good about TV. All those people who were saying things about TV 50 years ago, they were all correct. Look what TV has wrought in our society, right? And the industry whether it's sports or entertainment generally, it's always been as amoral as it's ever been. And I'm maybe going a little too far just talking about Bob Costas and whatever, but you know, when we talk about network executives, we're not talking about people who have a lot of sentiment, right? They're not overly sentimental folks.
No.
Hey, you know, beyond anything else, think about all the TV shows over the years, like legendary, all-time great TV shows that just ended without a send-off, right? I mean, how many of them never got like a quality series finale? You know what they're going to do with The Simpsons? They're going to keep that thing on until somebody passes away. They are. I mean, I'm not really joking. They are. The season 36, Harry Shearer's 80. That show's not getting a real send-off. And if it does, it'll be with AI-generated voice actors. I'm not kidding. I'm really not making a joke. That's the way it's going to end. Okay? So, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's also just the way it goes. And when it comes down to it, Bob's style of intellectual sobriety that sometimes bordered on, you know, maybe a bit of haughtiness, right? That sometimes was alienating to people who don't like a lot of that, you know, the perception that you're trying to show off how smart you are. That style was not always welcome, especially in the late 2010s and onward. Eloquence is also not really welcome. People don't want eloquence and they don't want intellect. They want screaming, or at least the executives think that's what they want and that's what they tend to produce. So he was also just completely out of step with that trend.
Yeah, that's true. And as a result, he got a whole lot of whimper and no bang. But maybe, just maybe, Bob just turned 73. Maybe, just maybe, within the next couple of years, at least there'll be some sort of an on-air something-something where Bob gets an opportunity to say goodbye to NBC and possibly to his broadcast career as a whole, even though he did say during the podcast that his broadcasting career is not over. I'm sure that he'll be on CNN talking about politics any moment now. They always call on him. And of course, if somebody passes away, there's a good possibility that Costas will be called upon to offer some sort of context to a career of some famous sports person, be it a broadcaster or an athlete. So we should expect to see Bob around for some time, but it would be nice if he and NBC sort of properly closed the door. But once again, as we've said, it's an unforgiving industry. And like you said, sometimes all that sentimental stuff goes right out the door with network executives.
It does. I will say, and I'm not basing this on any reporting or anything at all, just my speculation, I would expect him to be part of NBC's return telecast, the first telecast for the NBA. I would expect him and Marv Albert to be involved in some way, maybe in a pregame, you know, tease. Maybe he will do one of his old school 1990s teases for NBC. That's my expectation, not based on our conversation with Bob, not based on anything I'm hearing or anything I've seen reported. It just makes sense to me. And I think that's kind of limited to what he would be doing. I don't expect him to have any regular role with NBC. You know, kind of like what Vin Scully did when Peacock got baseball and Vin Scully did the open for the first telecast, or, Doc Emmerich has done a couple of opens here or there. That's what I think Bob probably means, because I don't expect you're going to see him in any working role for NBC.
And let's hope if or when that happens, he does some sort of tease or an open for the NBA's return to NBC. Let's hope he announces it right here on the Sports Media Watch podcast. That would be nice.
Hey, if we get Bob Costas again, I'll be very pleased. It was a wonderful gift to get him on the pod. I did feel a little bit bad because I was looking back and most of the time I say special guest. And then I saw when we had George Sedano on, I just said guest. So I want George Sedano to know you're a special guest,
George.
Too. It just didn't occur to me. I don't know why I left out special on the guest with George Sedano. But George was great. I think I left special off as well when I had Hannah Storm. That was like more than a year ago. But obviously, Hannah Storm, also a very special guest. all the guests on the podcast, in my view, are special guests. It's just determined by whether or not I remember to include that description.
There you go.
All right. If you enjoy what we do here on the SMW podcast, do us a favor and, you know, write a review. I know a lot of you out there do actually enjoy the podcast because you tell me that. If you do feel that way, drop us a rating and drop us a kind word, if you don't mind, on at least the Apple Podcast section. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you to Armand for joining me as always, and we will be back with more stuff down the line.
My name is Giorgio Settis. I'm the co-founder of Nutrafol.
My hair started thinning in my early 20s. I tried everything and nothing was really working. So we created Nutrafol. Our hair growth supplements undergo clinical trials and have helped millions of men and women get visibly thicker and stronger hair in just 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.